Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This is part three of my multi-part podcast of chats with magic friends while I was visiting and performing at the famed Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. In this week's podcast, we continue with conversations with magicians in the Los Angeles area. It was Wednesday and officially the, quote, magic day at Dean's shop. Now, I'm talking about Dean Dill's barbershop, where he cuts hair as efficiently as he does the cards. He also sells his original magic creations in his shop. But you never know who will stop by for a visit or a snip. Today, I caught Alan Bursky and Pete Biro in the shop. The first part of this podcast might be a bit tedious for some, but just imagine that you were a visiting magician or a patron who happened in the shop that day to eavesdrop on the conversation. I set up my recorder and let it roll as Dean cut my hair and Alan talked. Pete put in his two cents every once in a while, too. Back at the castle, I spoke with Bill Goodwin, the librarian for the Magic Castle, who talks about the castle's library and how to organize your own library. Bill is also a fellow performer this week, following me in the close-up gallery. And finally, we chat with the builder of the Magic Castle himself, Mr. Milt Larson, the man with a million stories, and he shares a lot of them with us in this podcast. It's interesting to hear what the plans are that are in the works for the castle, plus the plethora of projects that Milt has in store, like a movie based on the castle, plus much, much more. So sit back and relax and enjoy part three of my week at the castle here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm at Dean's shop for haircutting and magic. About to get my haircut. Got Pete Biro and Alan Bursky who are here, as well as Dean Dill. And Alan, you were the director of entertainment for the Magic Island in Long Beach.
And Newport Beach.
Oh, and Houston as well.
The day Houston first opened, I was there. So I ran both places for almost 2 years.
Okay.
Mike Taylor. And then Mike sold it to Manfred and Merton. Jostle, and they were partners with him. Yeah, they were the second partner. I don't know, the place. And then, you know what happened was, really, they took all the money out of Newport Beach to open Houston. And then that first recession, you know, the oil recession.
Yep.
When that hit, it hit Houston, and all those partners panicked, and they wanted their money. So when they, when the recession hit Houston.
Yeah. And that would have been about 82?
No, this was later 80s, like 85?
Okay.
85, somewhere around that?
Well, that would have been about right, I guess. Because they actually opened the island in Houston in 81?
No.
When was it?
82? I was here the night they were opening. I worked there, let's see.
It had to be 82.
And 84.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Had to be 84.
All right, my friend, lay back here.
Okay. Had to be 84, even 85. So they opened, anyway, when the recession hit and everybody in Houston took their money out of Houston, it took down Newport Beach.
Yep.
And that's what happened with it. It took down,
you're a professional photographer. I'm going to have you to take a picture while he's cutting my hair.
Can I just try and trim it for you a little bit? I've always wanted it.
You're just going to push that button over there.
What are we doing?
I'm going to have you take a picture of Dean cutting my hair.
I can't hold it still.
You can, Alan.
Yeah,
I'm going to work those things.
Yeah. You know, I don't have the shape.
That thing's not going to get kicked off, is it?
I don't think so.
So your gun career is pretty much over then. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because Pete, you still, of course, you take digital photos, I guess, now, not just film.
He's always taking digital.
They still sell film?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Do they still sell film?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's put on your windows.
Yes, clever.
So, Alan, you were saying.
So, anyway, that took the.
So you think it opened in 84?
Yeah. Houston opened in 84.
Yeah.
Magic Island in Newport Beach opened probably 81.
Well, I thought that was earlier also. For some reason, I remember an article in the Linking Ring that talked about the opening of the Newport Beach facility, and I thought it was around 78 or 9.
No.
Oh, now wait. When was the reason they had an Egyptian theme was because of the King Tut exhibit that I understood they had a lot of stuff that was left over
from the museums, you know, and then the tour. And so they kind of were able to buy that stuff at a reduced rate.
I don't know, you know. I
you hadn't heard that?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I took some pictures. You want me to keep taking pictures?
Not right here.
Yeah, I'm not. You take one away and start actually cutting.
Oh, I got you shampooing.
That's fine.
Here, we'll find out. It's very simple.
You don't have to delete it. Yeah, that's fine.
No, I'm not just.
Can you stand up here and
call Mike Taylor
and straight down?
Yeah, I can do that. Well, not if your hair dryer's in the sink. Why don't you put the hair dryer
there. It's
now?
Over there. It's over there.
Put the hair dryer in the sink now.
Yeah. Crazy.
Which Michael?
So how did you get involved? Were you involved then with the thing on Universal Walk?
I got involved because Mike Cayley, who owned it, owned the laugh stops.
Yeah, okay.
And I was a comic, you know, and Mike Cayley, I knew Mike. Mike then became friends with my family and parents, and then Mike knew I did magic, and
yeah.
Was, you know, and I was an agent. I quit performing, was an agent and manager.
Okay.
So he just said that, you know, it was Larry Jennings was the entertainment director,
okay.
And then it was J.C. Wagner. And he said, these guys, you know, they're just going, you know, they don't know what they're doing. Everybody gets different prices. Michael.
Yes, sir.
What year did you open Magic Island in Newport Beach, and what year did you open Houston?
We opened in 81.
In Newport Beach.
Newport Beach in 81.
Yeah, what year was Houston, 84, 85? All right. I'm sitting with a group of magicians. I'm just trying to remember.
I've met Mike. Is that Michael Cayley?
Yeah, with Scott Wells. Yeah. You know Scott, remember Scott Wells?
A long number of years.
Yeah, say hello.
He's still getting his haircut. We're at Dean Dill's Magic Barbershop. So if you don't like the card you pick, you can get a haircut. So is my room ready?
It's there. As soon as I get the body out of there.
God. So is the, you know, there's no memorial,
good
there's
answer,
no nothing.
Yeah, good answer.
No, there's supposed to be a memorial later on in the month.
Where?
I don't know. Argus is going to see if he can get the comedy store.
Oh. Pardon me?
Well, I'll let you know what I do.
All right, well, it's got to be a lot roomier now without him.
The manager of the Magic Island. Newport Beach.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. All right, I'll talk to you a little later. Okay, I just wanted to get the date. Thanks.
So, that's confirms that.
Hello? Hello?
Goodbye.
You can't tell when they hang up?
No, because when they call forwarding stuff, sometimes you overlap. Eric Larson just called me. It's probably
So you were a comedian, and then so...
Yeah, I was a comedian. I gave up performing for 9 years when Freddie Prinze Sr. died. He was my best friend and roommate.
Oh, wow.
Was an agent at APA for a few years, had a management company.
Freddie Prinze committed suicide. Is that right?
Freddie Prinze Sr.?
Yeah.
Who's that? His dad, or...?
Freddie Prinze Jr. is the kid today.
Oh.
Well, kid. He's 38 years old. Freddie Prinze, his father was the star of Chico and the Man, was my best friend and roommate.
I'm going to try to make this haircut live up to that picture.
That picture there? Yeah, because that was cut. That picture, I think I had my haircut shortly
before. No, I'm just talking about that whole look.
Oh.
I think you should leave it like that. It sort of looks like George Reeves from Superman.
It does, doesn't it?
No, the way it's cut right now.
He's
the way you have it back.
Does that look like a skeleton?
How many more of these do you want?
That's fine. No, okay. Good. Yeah, I'm sure that's fine. Kaylee had... Just close the thing. It'll automatically go off. Whenever that... he opened the Magic Island Newport Beach, Was it a comedy club also?
No, he had a comedy club.
That's Hermosa Beach, I'm thinking.
No, that's the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach.
Completely different.
Yeah, completely different owner, completely different people.
Okay.
Michael Cayley is actually the first one to open a comedy club that had three comedians, you know, the MC, the middle, and the headliner.
Yeah.
He's the one who started all that. You know, the comedy condo where you rent an apartment
because
he couldn't afford to keep guys in hotels.
Uh-huh.
He was the first one to give Robin Williams a pay job.
Hmm.
And then... That was 77, February 77. Within 3 years, they started opening up, you know, the Cleveland Comedy Club, Punchline San Francisco, a few other places. The Comedy Magic Club opened in 78 or 79.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by the mid-80s, there were hundreds of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it peaked around 88.
Yeah, comedy clubs really, they came up and down. I mean, it was really just almost a flash in the pan. It seems like they were there
and then... They exploded, and then all of a sudden
exactly.
They went away.
That's exactly what happened. They exploded.
You know, everybody, they were everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
I remember, like, the Punchline in Atlanta. Now, the original Punchline is still there. But they had 9 clubs at one time. Governors had 4 or 5 clubs.
Who was the Laugh Stop?
That was Mike Haley.
I worked there a couple of
Yeah, he had about 6 or 7 of them, and he sold them off. By the way, he had Claremont, he had Montclair, Claremont, Palm Springs, Newport, Santa Ana, and then they had one in Encino, and then they made my father a partner when nobody wanted to work for him anymore, and they changed the name from the Laugh Stop to Herman's Cabaret after my dad. Because my parents, you know, when I was a kid moved out here, everybody was at my house all the time. You know, for Easter, Thanksgiving, whatever,
yeah.
You know, or every morning for coffee. So they all liked my parents, my father. And then later on, my dad even managed a comedy store when he was, we had a couple of heart attacks, he didn't want to work anymore, so he worked off the books. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a cashier there too. So, you know, all these guys would go to the, Encino Club when they needed to answer. My father made my dad a partner.
I'll tell you, the one in Hermosa Beach seems to be the strongest. It just keeps coming.
Well, that's not a Laugh Stop. That's, you know, no. The MMA Comedy Magic Club, Mike Lacy. Yeah, he said he's been having some, you know, business has been really, really slow. Now, every hotel in Las Vegas has a comedy club, you know.
Yeah, Tropicana and all of
them. Well, I'm at the Trop and at Harrah's a lot. I was just at the Trop.
Well, that's where Murray Sawchuk's working at the Trop, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the Trop. I was just at the Trop. I'm there again in November, and I'm at Harrah's again in September. But every other, you know, there's Brad Garrett's Comedy Club. There are Dolly's, the Riv. I mean, everyone.
Hmm. So that's where the comedy clubs have gone, is to Las Vegas, basically, mm-hmm. to the casino.
Yeah, and they're in Atlantic City, still has the Comedy Stop, mm-hmm. and one other. I mean, there's still a few left.
What about the Improv? Is that still around?
Yeah, there's Improv in Atlantic City. There's Improv in Las Vegas, which I work. There's an Improv at Harrah's in Lake Tahoe I've worked. And then there's Improvs all over the country. There's Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah.
There's the Improv here.
And that's still owned by...
Bud Freeman only owns one of them.
Oh.
A couple of different people own
He was one I always associated with.
Yeah, well, it's still his name. It says Bud Freeman's Improv.
Okay.
He's still the booker of the one in Las Vegas in Lake Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
He's still... No, it's still his franchise and name.
He owns the comedy store.
Mitzi's short show at the time. You know, she still has the La Jolla one.
Well, when you were working, going back to Magic Island in Newport Beach, that went from a private club to public, didn't it?
No, it stayed private.
Okay, because I know that, of course, the island, you know, changed.
No.
Once it changed ownership.
I used to hire Charles Green there a lot. I used to hire.
Sure, sure.
And Paul Driscoll, is that his name?
Paul's still around, Tall Paul.
Yeah.
Yep. He is not as active in the local magic community as what he once was. You know, he was doing some cruise ships and some other things. His father died a while back, and then just within the last few months, I believe, his mother passed. And so I think he's just been handling some affairs. But I haven't heard of other clients saying, well, you know, we had
right.
Paul or whatever. So I don't know what he's doing so much anymore. And Charles Green's, last I heard, was still working some trade shows, pharmaceutical industry.
Charles.
Yeah.
What happened to Frank Price?
Frank's still around. I see him once or twice a month. He's the president right now of the Houston Association of Vision.
Oh, I'll miss it.
I will. Yep.
What happened to Kent? The house down there. Apparently he left his waitress down there, left his wife there.
His
Kent Bingham.
Hank. Oh, Kent Bingham.
Yeah.
Wow, he left long. That was your very early days. Yeah. There was another fellow that worked with him at the same time who ended up writing the play that was called Cappuccino.
Bob Arnold.
I think it was Bob. Yeah, Arnold. Yeah. It wasn't Tom Arnold. Bob,
no, it was Bob Arnold.
Yeah. What was that? Magic and Cappuccino or Double Cappuccino? Triple Espresso. Something like that. It was a play that kind of
was taken around to different theaters around the country, and they had different people play the parts. I think it was one magician and a couple other guys that did something. It was, you know what, Pete, what I'm talking about? Does that ring a bell? It was, I think it was called Triple Espresso or Cappuccino.
Yeah, I forget which one.
Yeah, but Arnold was the one, I think, who wrote it and had the rights to that play. I never did see it out there. So, Pete, what's been happening magic-wise in your life?
Me? Nothing. Yeah. I just, yesterday I did an interview on a guy who's doing a documentary film on spoof shows.
Oh, yeah?
And when I was 17 years old, I was an assistant in Francisco's Midnight Spoof Show. Mm-hmm. Traveled up and down the state and worked on spook shows.
Uh-huh.
And the guy's trying to find different people that have anything to do or had anything to do with spook shows, and he's doing a documentary film.
Well, it's almost too late, you know, that most of those guys obviously are
gone. I was the last living assistant. You know, everybody else has died that worked in Arthur's the Francisco show.
Right. There was some guy that traveled in Texas, and the name escapes me.
Morris?
No, not Philip Morris.
Philip Morris is one of the guys.
Yeah, he's around.
And there's a guy that bought the Silkini show.
Silkini, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Tom?
Right now?
Yeah.
I'm working Magic Castle.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I'm doing the early close-up.
Are you working next Friday lunch?
You mean
this Friday?
This Friday lunch?
Yeah.
No, Raphael is.
Oh.
They
just walk put up with water them. In the sink. Your sink is wet, and you put that in there.
There you go.
I mean, I'm not trying to be an old lady, but you're crazy.
It's okay. I appreciate it, really. Keep an eye.
I emailed him, but it bounced back, and I offered to loan him a set of cups.
Well, I was wondering if he was going to do that. I just had breakfast with him yesterday, and we talked a little bit about that.
You know,
I ask magicians from time to time, you know, for words of advice, and I remember a fellow who retired to Houston, Mercer Helms. I don't know if you guys remember him or not.
I remember Mercer Helms. You know, he's a gunsmith, and he was Phyllis Diller's son-in-law.
That's correct.
He's still traveling, yeah.
And I asked what his advice was, and he said, never leave your wallet in the dressing room. I remember that to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, you see him much?
You know, I haven't in years. He sends around emails. I'm on his email list, and he'll send a joke or something every once in a while, you know, some warning of virus or something. But he's still in Houston, but it's been years since I've...
Last time I saw him in person had to be 15 years, somewhere around. I went to... he was opening for Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, right. So, well, even after they got divorced, apparently...
Yeah, he stayed here.
He continued to work with them.
Yeah, they stayed
relationship.
Close. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he worked at Magic Island pretty frequently there for a while.
Yeah, I saw him all the time. Mm-hmm. And in Newport Beach, I saw him all the time.
And what?
In Newport Beach.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a gunsmith by trade.
And I think, was he in a movie also? It seems like he was in some sort of a cult classic, something about magic or wizards or something.
I don't know.
I can't think of the name of it. He had some small part in something. Anyhow. So, Dina, you haven't done much talking. What you been up to? You been anything new here recently?
Nope.
Don't put too much on there. I'm going to probably go home back to the room and wash it and shave over my show tonight.
Okay.
You're making me look good.
Well, you know, I've had a big opening in the back.
Yeah. In fact, that was another thing. You know, Mercer Helm had given me some advice. He said, you might want to think about getting like a little hairpiece or something, you know, on the back. You know, of course, what Fielding West does is just spray paints it, you know, during the show.
Yeah, but it got to the point where, I mean, I have mine in the car.
First of all,
I'm taking it in to get
you
a service.
You don't have to see it.
What?
Yeah. So don't worry about it.
But he said whenever you turn your back, you know, to the audience and I'm drawing on a pad or something, that's kind of what I said. It doesn't bother me.
Cares.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody else bothers everybody else. You know, they love the face.
Geez, what are you going to do about that? I mean, hey, you look like you're gaining weight. Hey, it looks like this and that. That length feel okay or you want shorter?
Maybe a little bit shorter.
A little shorter?
Do you mind?
Of course not.
Yeah.
Looks good.
I think it looks great, actually.
I'm afraid to go too short.
Well, yeah.
That's just the way I am.
Hold on, wait a minute.
Listen, if you want it shorter, let's crush to it. Crush to it and feel it.
Okay.
You can tell. You're here. You wear it.
I was taking it in, but I didn't want to go into town. I got to do it tomorrow.
It's actually, it looks
great. I dropped one off.
Right, just take,
as I drop one off.
Oh, there it is.
The other one.
Is that your piece?
Yeah, well, I have two.
Let's take one in.
You take one in, you bring one back.
Yeah.
You know, just it needs hair, you know. I got to get searched, so they put hair in there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You
want
to take more off? Tell me the truth. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. If you think if you're a little more out of it.
And my hair piece is sitting out.
Or if you like it a little shorter, it's no problem. No.
I like,
that's
you know,
a second.
Where it is, I like it. Actually, I like it. You know, when I get accustomed,
you feel like there's too much on top right there, right?
But the last few times that I've had it cut, it's like I think it's too short. It's like
I understand that.
What is
so
at least
you sculpted it, so I think it's
4,800 for two.
You know, did you brush through
4,000?
It?
4,800 for two of them.
Yeah. And how it feels?
I love it.
Lengthwise?
Yeah. I'm going to leave it.
So Richard Kaufman's doing another convention next year.
Because it won't make a whole lot of difference whether I take a little more off or not. Other than it'll look the same.
I wish you'd do one out here so I could go
take a little more off. It'll look the same. It'll just give you a little bit. Another week worth of, yeah.
Okay. Just a wee bit more then.
It was Max and Johnny Thompson just told me, but basically he said most people from Southern California don't go to the Magic Convention. They go to one in Vegas.
So what about the Magic Con, the one down in San Diego?
Well, a few people go. You know, a lot
that's
of
more of a younger guy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. No, but, you know, I only know guys who go there who are going for free.
Yeah.
But you know, Bill Larson used to say, you know, they always bring this up every few years. Every new generation brings this up a lot. Having a Magic Castle Magic Convention. And Bill used to say every night, you know, the Magic Castle is
a
Magic Convention.
That's true. Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I ran into last evening. I just went up to the Owl Bar. And it was Don Greenberg. You remember Jack Greenberg, don't you? And that his son Don was in town. He's a pilot and was just on a turnaround flight with Delta. And he said, I'm having dinner. Going to get to see one show, and I got to get back and, you know, catch a flight out. And he said, I can catch you, or I can catch Bob Cassidy, who was working in the parlor. And I said, you see me anytime. I said, I'll do a private show for you sometime later. But you're not going to get to see Bob very often, and he's great. And Bob Cassidy. Doing mentalism in the parlor. He's legendary. Matter of fact, I almost brought him here this afternoon, but I got tied up. Well, he traveled different circles, I'd say, Dean, because he's again a mentalist, you know, really, but really strong mentalism.
Man, huh?
Yeah, he works like in biker bars. You know, he's a different kind of a guy. He's got a long white ponytail. He's got a look and talk, and he's quite a guy.
Right, you look at him and you go, he's
somebody.
Yeah.
There's two Bob Cassidy's. One of them is a balloon guy that's crazy. Unbelievable. Hyper. I'm beyond hyper.
Really? Young or old guy?
Younger
guy or
older
guy?
Maybe late 30s, early 40s.
Oh, younger guy. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say Bob, the one that's a mentalist is
check that out.
Like 70. Oh, yeah, I can see it here. Yeah. That's it.
See?
Okay. Yeah. The civil age one. Yeah, I'm trying to. Oh,
so is that Linnell like, you know, closing shop? Are they like almost out of business?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Good. Good question, and I don't know the answer. I
know Lewis is very sick. It's Parkinson's.
He is?
Yeah.
Who is?
Lewis Falanga.
Lewis Falanga.
Oh, wow.
That's too bad.
I heard it was cancer, this or that, but I heard whatever it is, and then I found out it was Parkinson's. It's real bad.
Yeah. Well, you know that, of course, Joni Spina has been ill for a long time, and she's
who?
Joni Spina.
Yeah.
And she's going to move to Houston. In fact, I just talked with Joan Lawton a couple nights ago, and she said Joni's coming back to Houston to wait for a liver and lungs
transplant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she was just in Houston last month for a while, you know, getting all these tests and everything. Mm-hmm. Now she's just got to be there because when the person, you know, calls that we need you here, like in the next hour, you know.
Really.
So she's Dan Summers. You know Dan Summers by chance? He's an illusionist and builder. He's the one who builds Walter Blaney's illusions for him. Then now is Ladder Levitation and Hoop and everything. He's got the rights to, I think, all that. But, yeah, Dan is a great guy. He lives in Kingwood up by Walbert.
That was Alan Bursky you've been hearing, by the way.
Hey, edit that. I deny all of this. I'm Mike Caveney.
There we go. Thank you very much for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. All right, we are back at the Magic Castle at the Owl Bar, and sitting here with, I'm doing the early close-up, and Bill Goodwin is doing the late close-up, and here he is with me now. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
And he is also the Castle Librarian, which you've been doing for how long?
7.5 years now.
7.5, not 7.75, but just
it might be 3/4 if I thought about it.
Yeah. Have you always had a fascination with books?
Yeah. Growing up, I just loved learning from books. Mm-hmm. Of course, then I had no other options. Videotapes weren't around then.
Yeah. So you know what a Dewey Decimal System is then?
A little bit, yes.
Have you, now as far as how the library is set up, is it on some sort of a, like a Dewey Decimal or something? I mean, they don't check out the books, I know, but how
are
they?
Yeah, we can't check them out. We have our own system that was put together by Carol Marie. And I guess if we had a Dewey Decimal System, all the books would have the same number.
They would, wouldn't
Magic.
They? Yeah.
Now, we have a system she put together that's based on the author's last name, mm-hmm. and using something called cutter numbers as well. And then we have a designation for the first letter of the title, which is included in that number we put together.
Okay.
And just our own little system. We had to do something.
Everybody's got their own system. You know that I have certainly mine for my library. I've got about 800, 900 books in my library. And I have them, like, in history. I've got comedy and script writing, and I've got mentalism. And then I've got a Vernon section, you know,
okay.
And I've got cards. And all these things are just a little bit different. Thank you, Patrick, very much. There's our butler bringing the wine for this evening. Thank you. So, we were also talking last night just about making sure that you record where your books are. Do you have that kind of, I mean, like I set up an Excel spreadsheet, so I've got the name and the author and the year and the print number and edition, what the subject matter is, the cost and everything, and so I put a book plate that I glue into every book, so that way that if it doesn't have a book plate, then I know that it hasn't been sorted yet. At least I know what's in there, and I can go back through and make sure. Also, I can carry this. They have different apps now on my phone, so that way that I can make sure I'm not buying another copy of a book that I've already got that I haven't read in a while.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all done that.
Yes.
So what kind of a system do you have? I assume you have a pretty good library of your own at home.
Yeah. Personally, I just throw books on the shelf, and I sort of remember
that
from my own
things.
I don't have that many books. No, I don't have 800 or 900 like you do.
Yeah.
But for the library here, we have two databases. One's FileMaker, which we use when we input things. And we also have an online database that was put together by Rich Cowley for us. So now members from home can check to see what we have. They don't get to read the book, but they can see our listings, what our holdings are. So that way they can find out if it's worth going down to the library to look at this book. They'll know in advance if we even have it. So it saves them time.
Yeah.
And we also have on our library page on the website an Excel spreadsheet for our video vault holding. We got thousands of hours of old footage like Ricky Chang and the Dinosaur Show or mm-hmm. old Doug Henning specials or T. Nelson Downs' birthday party, things like that.
Now, when people want to check out or to watch a video, is there a room that they go to or is it just in the library? I mean, so that way they're not going to interrupt everybody or disturb them while...
No, well, we have headphones on everything.
Oh, you got headphones.
Yeah,
okay.
And we just started last year to digitize our instructional DVDs, and we're all going to put the video ball stuff on there as well. So now, instead of going to a DVD player, which we still have some of those, you go to a computer station, and it's got a better search function than our FileMaker. So now you can put in Michael Lamar. Any DVD he's on will pop up, and you can just watch it just on the computer there.
And then as far as the library, how did that change or evolve? Because I remember in the early days, of course, that it used to be upstairs, and then that's where the office is now, and then it moved as they built on downstairs.
Yes.
So,
well, it's a good thing they moved it, huh?
Yes, after the
sprinklers from that fire would have destroyed us.
Yeah,
we just ran out of room up there, you know.
Is that what
and
it was?
Then, and Milt also brought in all the books he had from the Variety Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
So we're housing that library for a while as well down there. We opened up downstairs in 92. Actually, the library itself was open in 91 down there by appointment only.
Yeah.
The Inner Circle itself opened in 92. And it's just wonderful because of all the space.
Yeah.
And then in 2006, early 2007, we revamped what the library looked like downstairs. So now it's gorgeous. We used to have big, ugly metal filing cabinets and things, and now everything's wood. It looks really gorgeous.
Like a real library should.
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Now, do you get a lot of donations? And if you have duplicates, you have sales, or what do you do?
Yes, we always get the donation every month from Hocus Pocus Magic. Paul Gross is up there, and he sends us a box of all the new things that come out every month.
Oh, that's cool.
Just as to be generous to the members, just to pay back magic, that's what he says. So it's wonderful. And then we get other people that do things. You'll recall, I think you donated some of your stuff when you lectured here. The lecturers will donate things. Mm-hmm. And recently I just did get a huge donation from Mr. Paul Smith, member number 27.
Oh, goodness.
So he had donated over 350 items for us. Mm-hmm. And most we had, so I had a big sale last week, and we did really good. And
are those sold to members only, or are they available like on eBay? Or how?
We do have a Magic Castle eBay store. I like going to the members the first chance.
Yeah.
And if right now the things that didn't sell, I put on our sales shelf inside the library.
Okay.
Giving them more chance to do it. If they don't sell after a while, I'll put them on eBay and then the world can get a chance.
Whatever. Right. Now, for people who want to purchase those, are they for members only, should say magician members only, or to anybody?
Well, you know, I was selling things during the sale for, there was even a guest that showed up. Her boyfriend was a magician. She bought a book for him as a gift.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some people just want to learn magic, but they're not a full-fledged magician member. I had an associate member buy, like, the entire Tower Bell course, plus all
the
Vernon books. They want to learn, so why should I say no to that?
Right, and that's a good place to start, that's for sure. I got started with the Tower Bell, you know, then as well. What is your recommendation? I guess you obviously tell everybody to read and to learn a trick.
Yeah.
You were saying to me last evening something about that you were publishing something, I think, in Genie, a trick, and then but didn't explain that. Go check it out.
Oh, this was a few months back. They have, excuse me, you can watch little videos embedded in the iGenie, in the electronic version of Genie.
Yeah.
And they had filmed me, and I did a few tricks that I didn't explain them. I just performed them that were only available in books that you couldn't get on DVD, just to try to let people know, don't stop reading, because there's a ton of stuff out there that's really great that you can only find if you read.
Yeah. Now, I talked with Brent Garris yesterday and over the Magic Apple, and he said he thought that there are fewer magic books being published now. Of course, there are a lot more. I don't know whether there might be PDFs, perhaps, but lecture notes, but there's certainly a lot more DVDs. My question to you as a librarian, are you seeing that as well? I mean, starting to drop off, people publishing?
I definitely am, especially through the Hocus Pocus donation every month.
Yeah.
We used to get almost an equal amount of books and DVDs. Now we get maybe two books and a lot more DVDs. You know, I can see the difference.
Uh-huh. And what is one of your favorite books? Which one?
Well, I'm a card guy, so I love Expert Card Technique. It's one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
So every time I go back to that, I see something I missed the first time. It's just a wealth of stuff in there. I love Larry Jennings material. I love Roy Walton stuff. I love anything by Jerry Sadowitz. So the Roy Walton books, of course. The Crypt magazines, which the library unfortunately does not have, are just great.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm a card guy, so what do you want?
Well, you gave the good recommendations. Those are good books then as well. Well, speaking of that, then, who were your personal influences, I guess? And who do you...
I started out Paul Harris, of course, because he was there when I was a teenager. And Daryl, who was my only idol in magic.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he's one of the great card men, even though he doesn't get a chance to show what he used to do. I don't know if you remember back in the day when his whole act was a sleight of hand with cards.
Well, he wrote Puerto Rican Gambler.
Yeah.
You know, I was just telling somebody a story about that today, that he was telling where he was in Las Vegas and gambling one time, and somebody, security guard, came up and tapped him on the shoulder. Have you heard this story?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, tapped him on the shoulder and said, sir, would you mind coming with us? And he said, okay, he's thinking, what did I do, you know? And he goes upstairs and he goes, you know, up to the security area where all these cameras are and everything. And they said, are you Mr. Daryl Martinez? And he said, yes. He said, did you write the book Puerto Rican Gambler? And he said, yeah. And he said, well, how did you know? And he said, well, we're watching the videos up here, and your hands are on the cover of the book, and the ring that you were wearing is the same ring that you're wearing now, and I thought that might be you, and I'm a magician, I wanted your autograph. And, of course, he was all sweating.
Yeah, you don't want to get pulled in that room. At least that was for a good reason.
Yeah, exactly. So he was...
And those are the people I actually saw when I was young, and I was, they came to our, I grew up in Oxnard, California, and my teacher was Hal Brocious, who now lives in, Texas. And,
whereabouts in Texas?
Austin.
Big state.
Austin.
In Austin, Texas, okay.
Or Round Rock, is that near Austin?
Yeah, Round Rock, yeah, sure.
And, when I worked at TAOM in Austin, I got a chance to see him.
This is what they make it cool.
Yeah, I did, it was nice. Yeah, those guys, they came to our club for lecturing, and so I got to see them live. And the other, my other influences came from books. I read anything I could with Larry Jennings stuff, Anywhere Walton stuff, anything by J.K. Hartman. I never met these people. I still haven't met J.K. Hartman, one of my heroes. But, yeah, just they were my big influences for cards.
Have you written any books or a couple of some things on your own?
I've had some lecture notes. I've published over 100 items, mostly in lecture notes and some
Have you thought about putting them all into a book?
Yeah, maybe someday I'll do it, yeah.
Do it sooner than later, you know.
Yeah.
If there are fewer books that are coming out right now, then it will be popular because, you know, it won't get lost with all the rest of
the spotlight on it. Wow, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's no end in sight as far as you continuing on the librarian. I mean, you just, you're satisfied. I mean, you're kind of like in seventh heaven
now.
This job
fits me like a glove. You know, I've always liked the books, and now I get to, you know, hang around them. I mean, people think I get to read and watch videos all day, but I don't. I'm actually working and stuff all the time.
What are you working on?
Well, the digitizing takes a lot. And today I got like 5 boxes from the binders. We take our magazines and bind them. And I had to double check to make sure they were correct. Now I got to put those in the system and get them on the shelf tag.
Right. Interesting. And you have, you say you're from Oxnard, so when did you actually join the Magic Castle?
As a junior? Yeah, as a junior in 1978. Mm-hmm. Another kid in my club up in Oxnard tried for the junior audition. I'm like, what's the Magic Castle? I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
So one of our older members brought me down for a Sunday brunch, and I'm like, well, this is great. And my next auditions, I got in.
Wow.
So it was nice.
And been there ever since. Now, you're no longer in Oxnard. You live closer, I guess, now.
Yeah, I live about a block and a half away from
this place.
Oh, so you
walk home.
I walk home. It's so sweet.
Wow. You can see why you never leave. Do you, you mentioned working at TOM a few years ago. Do you go out and work conventions from time to time?
Once in a while, if somebody wants to book me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get the calls very much.
And if they want to find you, what's your website or email address?
Yeah, well, BillGoodmanMagic.com.
Okay.
And you can always get in touch with me through the Magic Castle as well.
Yeah, yeah. Super. One last question, because my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? What is it that your slogan, your what's important to you, what's your philosophy?
You know, I don't know. When people ask me for advice, the main thing I say to them is keep it fun.
Okay.
And that would be, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
Just keep it fun. Doesn't matter what you do in magic.
Yeah.
If you just want to collect, you want to perform, you just invent tricks, just keep it fun.
Yeah. That's great. Keep it fun. I guess I should have asked before that, though, what you recommend for young people or someone who's new is getting into magic, what book or books should they read or look at?
Wow.
I mean, when people are coming in, they're saying, well, my son's wanting to get involved in magic, you know, can you make a recommendation?
Well, I still think the Mark Wilson Course of Magic is one
still
of the
good.
Great beginner books.
Sure. And he's downstairs teaching tonight.
Yes, he is.
And,
and every step's got an illustration right next to it.
Yeah.
So it's very user-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
That was Bill Goodwin here at the Magic Castle. For the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here, of course, at the Magic Castle and with the proprietor, actually, Milt Larson. What is your correct title today?
Well, I'd like to be considered the creator of the Magic Castle.
Of course,
because that's a really nice word. And my late brother and I were the founders, Bill Daly with the Academy of Magical Arts, and I was the guy that wanted to build a silly castle and all that kind of stuff. But basically, going back to 1963, which is when we opened the whole club, is you know, my job was to build a club, and his job was to build a club.
Yeah. So, okay. So, both had a common goal, you know, kind of back then.
In answer to your question, I'm the president of Magic Castle, Inc., and the Academy of Magic Arts is its own president. So,
okay, so it always kind of confuses me as to what the
totally confusing.
Is.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not the only one. Well, what is Neil Patrick Harris then? He's the president of.
Well, he was.
Was. Now Erica is.
Yeah, Erica is the new president. The president. The term limits.
Okay.
So they can only be, I think it's 8 years or 6 years or something.
Well, I figured when he went back out to New York City, you know, to work on that play, that he wasn't going to be able to be as much hands-on.
He really wanted to live in New York. And,
yeah.
And he has a wonderful townhouse now in New York. And, and he and his partner, David, and and the kids, and he loves New York.
Yeah.
And he's doing this major hit musical. It's a I would be very surprised if he doesn't get the Tony Award for it.
Mm-hmm. I've heard. Have you seen it? Have you gone out to see it?
I haven't. It's not been open that long, and and I don't get to New York that often. I used to go there quite often, and then I found out about London, and I really like London better than New York. So, well, we had the Mayfair Music Hall, which is a British
Hall.
And when I found out about that, I was kind of went back to there. My city, they've been kind of West Coast. And
well, it's a long way. London, I mean, from New York, it's not as far, but you got to go across the country and then across the Atlantic.
Yeah, but the philosophy is that, you know, I was always one of those West Coast entrepreneurs. Sit under the palm tree, get a suntan, and let the coconuts fall on your head, you know. In New York, you get up early in the morning and work all day and try to do whatever you can do to get business going because there's no such thing as relaxing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really think about New York as opposed to...
it's not a beach laid-back city by any means.
Hollywood, Beverly Hills and stuff. It's true, you know. Their corporate offices here usually have breaks. Look at the Disney campus. They don't even call it a studio anymore. But New York is very much business, and the reason I say London is because that was always kind of old world. And I think one thing about the Magic Castle is one of the compliments we get all the time about the castle is it's like a place you might expect to find in Paris or London or maybe San Francisco, but definitely not in Los Angeles. And I was born in Pasadena, so.
Yeah. Not Pasadena, Texas, but Pasadena, California.
I always use a line. I said, I was born in the Far East, and I wait for it, and I said, Pasadena.
Yeah.
And for people out here, they think that's funny.
Exactly. Well, talking about building this, that I'd read the book, and I've talked to you, I think, before about this, and that you had, you were working with Truth or Consequences, back when, and John Trum or someone.
John Trum, huh?
Yeah. Well, he was involved with the building of this?
Well, he was the art director on Truth and Consequences when we met.
Okay.
And later he was the art director for the Johnny Carson show.
Right, I remember the Carson show, sure.
The top job in NBC to do that show, but it's, we met when he was doing our show, and he was a great guy, but when I first started the castle, all I wanted to do is this grand old mansion.
It was kind of your dad's idea, is that right, for this
club?
Well,
he had an idea of doing the academy and a club for magicians.
Yeah.
I don't think he really quite figured out that we were going to take a grand old mansion and turn it into a club.
Yeah.
But whatever that is. But, so... John Trum, the art director, when we met on Truth and Consequences, practically the day I got this place, I brought him over here because he had done a set for our show.
Okay.
It was a Victorian drawing room, and it was the most beautiful
scene, and you thought this is going to be my vision.
God, anybody can do it. It's a set. We're going to do a show with it and tear it down the next day. Movies.
Exactly.
So at any rate, I said, come over and look at this place.
And it was probably in shambles at that time.
Well, it was a nice old house, but
anybody live here?
It had been modernized because they didn't at that time in the 1960s. It was considered.
Thank you, babe.
Not good to have old things. They
were starting to tear down stuff at that time. Yeah.
So he came over and looked at it, and I had done some things here. And he said, you really need my help. And from that time on, he was not my business partner, but my partner till the day he died as far as the guiding light of the artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Everything you look around here is, I built it.
Yeah.
Because we were tearing down buildings all over Southern California. But he'd look at a thing like a tin ceiling or something. He said, no, let's put that on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Let's put the doors on the ceiling. I mean, it's,
yeah.
And he's a completely brilliant different guy. So I owe a great deal to John Shaw.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, he passed away in 1988, so he's not here anymore. But
well, this continued to build, and then I know they turned the garage then into the library and everything else over the years in the 90s.
Well, we are now. We're talking in a what used to be a parking garage, but the old mansion is only a 6,000 square foot house, which was pretty sizable in 19.
At the time, my goodness, yeah.
I mean, it was a huge
house. It's like a
house.
Boarding house at that size.
But we ran out of space in the 70s, and we had this parking garage, and that was another, well, two floors times is another 3,000 square feet. So almost half the size of the whole castle. So we turned it in. But if you're in this right now, you folks watching this on audio, can't exactly see it.
No.
We're sitting in the thing. But everything looks like it was part of the old mansion.
It does.
We made sure that when you go from room to room, people can never
the same continuity.
Out. They have no idea where they are.
Yeah. You can certainly get lost. That's true. How many square feet do they have now since it's been built and rebuilt?
22,000.
Wow. Okay.
That's what almost more times the original house.
Now, somebody
I love the line. I've said, when you come up to the castle, you have to realize the castle is three times bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, which is true.
Yeah.
Because if you come up the hillside, right above the Dolby Theater, the Academy Awards Theater, and the Ocapitan Roosevelt Hotel, one block is a hill, and it looks like this grand old mansion.
Yeah.
And you don't see any of the work that goes on behind. So all you see is this grand old house.
Sure.
And then to come inside and figure, well, where did they get a theater? Where did they get this?
It reminds me of an old Popeye cartoon where I think Brutus had this tent, and Olive Oil stuck her head inside, and it was just a huge mansion, and she craned her neck all the way around. Anyhow, it's kind of like Doctor Who's TARDIS, I guess. It's bigger on the inside, kind of a thing. Now, I had heard that, are they talking about, are you going to be selling off part of the parking lot
the situation, which is from the day I met the owner of this property, the Glover family.
Yeah.
Tom Glover originally.
From Texas, my neck of the woods.
Yeah. Bought the entire hill.
Mm-hmm. Including the Amashira and all that.
Yeah. Oh, the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's 11 and a half acres of downtown Hollywood.
Wow.
The biggest single personally owned property.
Oh, it is. Oh, my gosh.
Well, in Los Angeles, really.
Okay.
Everything else is over there. But anyway, the Yamashiro at the top and a castle and the hotels and all that stuff. But it was all single property.
Mm-hmm.
And
hey, boss, I'm going to go home.
Sure, sure.
Yes, okay, go ahead.
So anyway, but the family always owned the whole property.
Okay, yes.
We people think we own it.
Yeah. You have like a 99-year lease or something.
It was just
a handshake, as I recall, from way back
the
when.
A handshake, and there was a... the original one was a... I figure I'm not going to take too many chances. I had a 10-year lease. And then so why don't we make it 20? And I was why don't we double that to 40? But never any problem. And there still is no problem.
Yeah.
But the family, because Tom passed away, and his widow took it, and then the family is kind of all over America.
Yeah. And they know they have some chunk of change out here just sitting. Yeah.
So at any rate, they decided at one point to sell the entire hill and had negotiations. And about that time is when the bottom fell out of the real estate market, and there were a lot of problems. So,
I'll go and check.
It never happened. Now, where they are, his family has now decided they really would like to sell the top of the hill,
yeah,
not the bottom. Now we're in the bottom hill.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and hopefully they're going to do that, and they'll be very happy. And the other part of the family will own the part of the hill, which is the Magic Castle.
Yes.
And then, ideally, down the line, conceivably, AMA, which is the club, could conceivably buy the property, and which would involve a lot of property here.
Yeah.
And part of the family would like to run the hotel and
the Magic Castle Hotel you're talking about, then, yeah.
Sure. Which is, we have nothing to do with, but it's the
just the name.
So we're very friendly with the thing. So I just a projection down the line is, I think, probably some major hotel person is going to buy the top of the hill, and the bottom of the hill will be the hotel and the Magic Castle and the parking lot and
all that.
And everybody will be happy.
Have you thought about doing little multiple level parking garages? Or, I mean, have you ever had parking
problems? That would be the ultimate plan.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, certainly.
Because that would service all the units.
Right. So is that kind of what the projection of the future, the next 10, 15 year plan?
I think it's the obvious way we have to go. It's, there is no question about the fact that the Magic Castle is kind of a one-use. And what have you got to do with it if it's not the Magic Castle? You can't tear it down and build a multi-story hotel here.
Right.
The zoning won't permit that. And PS is doing better than it's ever done in its life to a multi-million dollar business.
What's that, PS?
And the landlord's sharing that.
Okay.
So why would they not want to continue that, you know?
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So they're all... So it's happiness reigns, and if I had my crystal ball in front of me, I'd say that looking down the thing, there would be the Magic Castle Hotel.
Yeah.
And adjacent to that would be the Magic Castle Club.
Mm-hmm.
Adjacent to that would be the parking lot.
Parking lot, right.
Serving everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whoever owns whatever end of it is fine, you know.
Right. Now, you have other ventures that that you're involved with that's certainly outside of the Magic Castle, and Dale Hyman, I guess, kind of helps manage the Milton Larson.
Excuse me, I have to take a break from your thing because our bartender is ignoring me.
Oh.
Okay. Could I have one more of those? Would you like some?
You know, I will have a Crown and Coke, please.
Crown and Coke?
Yes, sir. Make it a Crown Diet Coke.
All right.
That's like the flavor, not the calorie. It doesn't matter.
It has nothing to do with anything, but you see, my voice starts cracking if I don't have enough alcohol in it. So. Thank you, Ruggie.
I always...
You were really not avoiding me. I just know you were being polite because you're...
I always enjoy Thursday nights are my magic and martini nights. For the last several years that I've done that, and I noticed that a lot of pictures of you are holding a martini with an olive, and I noticed even downstairs at the W.C. Fields bar that he was holding one as well.
But going back to start tape again, but the Magic Castles Inc., which is Dale Hyman and me and my wife and my end of the family, is basically the things that I've done here at the castle, building the trademarks, fixtures, all that kind of stuff. But it's also very involved with a lot of other enterprises. I had the Mayfair Music Hall downtown or at the Santa Monica.
Right.
That was a theater.
It's Magic.
And a Variety Arts Theater. And It's Magic has been going on for 56 years.
Is it still going on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
We're having a 60th anniversary 2 years from now. Yeah. But we play performing arts centers up and down the West Coast.
Yeah. Finally. You got some great posters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bought some of those from you way back when, and I've got them framed at home.
We finally discontinued the posters this year because they...
Oh, really? Why?
Well, they used to be people... buy these posters because everybody's walls are filled with posters now.
Yeah, that's true. I've got probably 30 posters on my wall, and I got another 90 under my bed that are flat. You know, I just don't have room for them.
And we're doing a 60th anniversary final poster. But the but at any rate, Richard Sherman and I. The writer of Mary Poppins.
Did she have a star on the Hollywood?
Oh yeah, well the Sherman brothers have, because of Mary Poppins and all the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That movie was about them, wasn't it? Tom Hanks they just had.
Walt Disney and everything.
Yeah.
And Sherman brothers on one side of the street, and the Larson brothers are on the other side.
Okay.
Because Bill and I have our star.
Yes, yes.
So they were Beavis had in 2006, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the 50th anniversary of Its Magic. So,
okay.
So, we're in for the long runs.
Right. Now, you had to move that from one hall to another because it was the Wilshire?
Well,
originally or
the
way
first
back when?
20 years at the Wilshire Ebell Theater.
That's where I went.
Which is a grand theater down in the...
Yeah, I remember going in the 80s, early 80s, I think I'm seeing that.
Well, we started there in 56, and actually 57, because the first one wasn't there. But I was 20 years at the Wilshire Ebell, and then I bought the Variety Arts Theater downtown.
Okay.
And that was in 1977. And that was a 1,200-seat theater and a 66,000-square-foot building and pretty interesting concept. And so the next several years we were at the Variety Arts Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the Variety Arts had a 12-year run, but it just didn't keep up with the world. So finally had to stop doing that. And then they... I stopped doing Its Magic for a couple of years, and then we started up again with Terry Hill, my current partner, production partner. And since then, we've been doing a show every year, and this last year we did 7 theaters up and down the West Coast, from Burlington, Washington to San Diego, and beautiful performing arts centers, and we just bring in a show and do them.
Right.
So that's great. And Dick Sherman and I are very involved. We have a musical called Pizzazz, which full-scale Broadway musical.
It has nothing to do with magic.
Nothing to do with magic. But Dick and I wrote the words of the music. And we produced the show. But it's a full-scale show, and we're hoping to take that maybe on a road, and we're probably going to do a production of it here in Hollywood this end of this year.
And what's it called again?
It's called Pizzazz.
Pizzazz, okay.
And it's a story of two comedians, Weber and Fields, at the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. They had an interesting career because at that time they were independent, major vaudeville comedians, but they had their own theater on Broadway, and they were the independents that fought the syndicate.
And this is a real true story.
True story. Okay. And the one person that entered into the story was George M. Cohan.
Oh, okay.
Before he was famous.
Okay.
He was the four Cohans were the vaudeville act, the four families.
Yeah.
But he wrote his first major shows and produced them in 1903 or 4 or something. And in 1900, when he was about 21 years old, he worked for Weber and Fields, and he got involved with this thing of fighting the syndicate, and that's what the whole story is about.
Okay.
So our play is the statue of George M. Cohan on Times Square.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes to life and tells the story about this fascinating
good premise.
Story.
Okay.
And it's a great premise.
Yeah.
And we've done been doing it for a long time. We had the first run through of a show back 20 years ago, and then we had a couple of things in Arlington, Texas, at the college there, and then we had the Granada Theater in Santa Barbara, and we've been playing. And any show in the world, you're never done with it until the day after the 2000th performance on Broadway. I mean, you're always rewriting because it can always be better.
Isn't that kind of like a magic trick? It seems like you're always working on something.
Exactly the way it is. So anyway, that's a major project we have going now. And then there's a movie, which is quaintly titled The Magic Castle. And that is a story about what might be happening within these walls.
Okay.
And totally fantasy.
Yeah, okay.
And that's 20th Century Fox.
Oh, you got good backing there.
A major movie. So a multi-million dollar picture. And
so they already got it in the can, or are they editing?
Oh, no, they're we've been
pre-production.
Well, we're at the stage they've gone through the writers, and they had a director which we're not happy with. So in fact, they're selecting a new director. And but when they're doing a picture for over $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
They usually think twice about making mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's Radar Films, and that's name wouldn't mean much to most people, but Ted Fields, who's a Marshall Fields.
No Marshall Fields.
He was very famous in the music business, starting record companies, and all they make is pictures that make money, you know, the mm-hmm. Police Academy and all these things. So,
right. So will this, the plan, Milt, to be kind of a comedy, you say a fantasy type of thing where magic takes place, I guess, within the walls, but it could be like a love story or a drama or a comedy or?
It's a family adventure comedy.
Okay.
It has a great deal to do with fantasy.
And big stars kind of planned? I mean, it's not going to be like straight to DVD kind of a thing.
It's the biggest stars they can find.
Yeah.
And the director that up to now is not directing it, but McGee was doing the original ones of these. But it's top drawer stuff.
Okay.
And but what it is it's more of a I think you'd liken it more to a Night at the Museum.
Oh, that's a funny movie. Great movie, yeah.
You know, what might
be happening
be
when the lights go out.
If we found the secret panel here that led into something that leads you to an entirely different world.
Yes.
And these are the magicians who are trying to get even with the bad magician and the good magician.
Okay.
It's a marvelous story.
Yeah.
I can't tell you too much about it because A, the cloak of secrecy, and B, I don't know much about it.
They're keeping you.
I've read the script, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah. So are they still fine-tuning the script, or are they trying to...
Right now, as a matter of fact, this week they're supposed to... in a film like this, the total answer is the green light from the studio.
Mm-hmm. You say waiting for the green light.
Waiting. Right.
Okay,
yeah.
Which you think is imminent?
Well, they said this week.
That's
so,
right. Okay.
Who knows?
So we may have another party Saturday night if they say yes.
No, if they say yes, then.
That'd be great.
That means that then they nail down the next director.
Mm-hmm.
Then they start the casting procedure.
So will 20th Century Fox be the ones who will say, we're going to get the director and the cast, and they're going to do all that?
Okay. Yeah. Well, Radar Films, which is Ted Fields' company, they own the property.
Let me break off on the side. Maybe you can explain something to me a little bit about movies that I don't understand. Whenever I watch a movie, it seems like the first 30 seconds to 60 seconds, it says, this is so-and-so films, you know, distributed by such-and-such. They don't have like 4, 5, 6 different company names I've never heard of. You said like Radar Films or whatever. What do those mean? Are these all companies that invest money?
What it means basically is, if you see the credit on this, would be probably the 20th Century Fox, searchlights and all
that
stuff.
Yeah.
And then the title would probably go Radar Films Present.
Yeah. And what does that mean? What do they do then?
They back the project
financially.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're the ones we deal with.
Okay, gotcha.
And
then there might be another company.
No, they are the ones that sold it to 20th Century Fox.
Oh, okay, it's okay.
20th Century Fox.
Oh, that's coming together.
Is the distributor.
Yes.
doesn't matter what you do with a film, it's how you market it and how you distribute it.
Right. And they have the distribution channels.
So, and you have that. So, they, so Radar sets up the thing with us, buying the story rights, doing whatever we do with anybody else to deal with additional directors. They sell that to the studio.
Yeah.
Studio says, hey, whoopee wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
How many millions of dollars is that going to cost? Well, that's $200 million. Okay, well, that's still a good idea.
Write a check, yeah.
So then it goes through the channel. The treatments on this thing from day one is they've set it out to some of the major writers in Hollywood.
Okay.
Write us a story about what you would do if you had the Magic Castle.
Okay. And you give them the premise and say, okay,
well, this, what would you?
Yeah, okay.
So, and...
So they have free reign to kind of...
No, but, hell, I wrote one. You know, they didn't buy it, but I wrote one.
Okay.
Carol Marie, who you just...
Yes, we're sitting here. Yep.
She is very knowledgeable. She wrote a treatment. Several major writers wrote a treatment. The ones that finally got the job,
yeah,
the ones that did The Karate Kid and some other major pictures, very hot writers, and they have written the screenplay.
I just had lunch today with a fraternity brother of mine who was a writer, showrunner, producer, director for Walker, Texas Ranger, and for the A-Team.
Okay.
Lots of Swamp Thing. He was the main thing on that, and so he's been a major writer, and that's his main focus also. So he was explaining to me about this process and the 100 hours a week, you know, that he would work and all that. You know,
well, the process is the writers on this film came up with a brilliant script, and everybody loved it, and we put our 2 cents. Into it, and everybody's 2 cents. Then I went to the studio, and they liked it.
Yeah.
And then things happen. Which, see, the business changes all the time.
Okay.
You know,
it's an amorphous thing.
Well, kind of, you know, now Marvel Comics is up there now. And
okay, sure. Yeah,
and
real
is that going to be there? Because maybe they're burning that bridge before they get there. So, and the studios,
good point.
Say, how can they possibly figure out what the public's going to want 3 years from now?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and that's where they are. So it's a so at any rate. So the writers, the treatment writers, wrote the screenplay.
Yeah,
they the executives top floor wanted changes, so they change it. Then. The director had a totally different idea of how to do it, so he made changes in their original screenplay. Fox decided they didn't like the way the director was going, so they got a new director.
Okay.
And the screenwriters had to go back to
square one almost and rewrite.
Going back to sort of the original, but with the input of who else is doing it. Like,
right.
Yeah. The process is incredible, and people have no clue.
And a lot of politics involved in all that,
no,
too.
It's not politics, it's business.
Business, okay.
The business is how are you going to make a film?
And get your money back and make money.
Well, you're putting out, this film will be over $100 million budget.
Okay.
It's already there.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very, very special effects.
I was going to say, if you're talking about something where there's some fantasy involved, you're talking about CGI and a lot of post-production work.
It starts here at the castle, but it goes into a whole different world.
Yeah.
And
okay.
The world is in space.
This is just the facade.
Yeah. If you read the script, it's brilliant. I mean, the guys did a great job on it. But it has nothing to do whatsoever with
what
it,
we see
it
here.
It goes back to here.
Yeah, okay.
That it all it starts here and ends here.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, there's this war going on with spirits.
Oh, wow.
And people have.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's two factions, the bad guys and
good wizards and bad wizards.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah, okay.
The library in this thing is 7 stories high, And stuff.
Yeah. Sound like Hogwarts or something.
Oh, yeah. But that's where you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway, but that's the business, and we're, you know, it's been 3 years in the making on this. And
how much longer do you think it's going to be? Well, if they get the green light, let's say, then how long will it take over?
If they get the green light, I would say probably it would go into production by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And probably
start casting and all that then soon.
Well, that maybe be the end of 15. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of our people, film is interesting because now my experience, you know, I did live television forever.
Wasn't Truth or Consequences?
Well, yeah, that was
live. Yeah,
it's a whole different world. You know, you're in the studio.
Was there any Kovacs live?
Oh yeah,
was it? Okay, that was one of my favorite shows way back when.
Ernie was a wonderful.
Did you know him?
Very, very.
Did you really?
Sure.
He must have been one.
My writing partner, Bobby Lahr, was on the Ernie Kovac show. Remember the little guy?
Yeah, I do. Okay.
That was Bobby Lahr.
Okay.
He was my writing partner.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And as a matter of fact, Ernie Kovacs was on our second It's Magic show.
What did he? Was he MC or something? Or?
No, he was just.
Did the Nairobi Trio?
No, he did the guillotine with my mother.
And, okay.
But he was just. At that time, he wasn't even a big star. He was just starting at NBC. And Stagwaris, who was part of the Castle, original board of directors, a comedy writer, and he was writing some stuff for Ernie.
Wow.
And our second show, I think it was, maybe third, but I think it was second. He said, would you like Ernie to do something? I said, yeah, because he wasn't a star.
Yes.
Big star, but he was a...
Now, was his wife, Kim Novak, a star at the time more than he was? Or
no.
Or she hadn't come into her own yet?
I don't know if they were even married or not, but I'm going back to 1956.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was 5 years old.
But he was a very nice man, and I was with Bobby the day before he died, and I mean, before Ernie died. But he was a...
Yeah.
Brilliant, technically inclined comedy mind.
Yeah, had a comedy mind.
He thought of things that hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah.
You've seen it on his shows. I mean, he understood what a camera could do. Nobody at that time was...
Yeah, now that's the thing I enjoyed about that is that he was stretching the boundaries of what television was at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And creating magic effects, really, with the camera.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's like, well, that's a great idea, you know, which, you know, now it's
at
school.
That time, he was doing camera tricks that we call them today.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it tilted the camera so the water would go upside down and
exactly.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, turn the camera.
Nobody
had thought of that.
And his one right after another, you know.
Yeah.
I loved Ernie, and he's a dear, dear man, and I miss him. He's a nice man.
Yeah, yeah.
My life was always in live television. I was never in movies. And my partner, Dick Sherman, was always in movies. He said, you ought to do movies. I said, no.
Well, you did the Bedknobs and Broomsticks movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you had a part in that and everything?
that was only because, you know, they needed somebody to do what I did, and I had fun doing it. Hello again. But but Dick was, he's used to going on a soundstage with 100 musicians and the stuff, and I'm used to going into a studio with 200 people and doing them. When a big hand gets here, you start the show. When it gets down there, you're done. And that's a whole different world.
Right, right.
And I love what I do, and he loves what we do. And we see each other every week and do stuff.
Now, did you ever work like in a comedy club or anything?
No,
I never really did that kind of comedy. I mean, the kind of magic that you've done has been, I don't know, magic conventions.
I never consider myself a comedian or actor or anything.
And you never took mentalism after your dad or anything?
Well, no. I mean, I've had a after a Screen Actor Guild card for 50 years, you know, because on Truth and Consequences, if we needed a workman,
yeah, you were the guy
to be the schlub who you never see.
Yeah,
the writers, we had three writers. We just write ourselves into the part, and we get the job. You know,
yeah, get the card.
They didn't care. They never knew who we were, and over the years that I've done my sidecar mainly because of table yanking and that stuff.
Yeah,
but you know the. But I never really consider myself an actor. I'm a terrible actor. And, but the and as far as a comedian, I love doing my comedy magic act, but it's a lot of work, so I don't do it very much anymore because, you know, if we do a show here, my Carpenter act is a lot of setup and breakdown and breaking stuff and everything. Well, 21 shows a week.
Yeah.
If you break three pieces of glass every show, and it costs $6 a piece. And
that's right. Yeah.
But I love it. I'm a ham. I give me, you know, open the refrigerator door, the light comes on, I start dancing.
You do 3 minutes.
But I don't consider myself a performer at all.
Did Bill perform? I don't remember seeing him do.
Oh, he was actually, you know, in his younger life, he did a beautiful illusion show, and he did the memories.
And Irene helped, that's right, didn't she?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And
I remember seeing the pictures. I never saw him personally. I never saw him perform.
He did a Memories of Dante on the It's Magic show 1 year, and it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
He had a presence and thing, but he never, again, Bill was a TV executive by nature, and that's why he could put together the Academy of Magic Awards. He was an administrative...
He knew the people.
...person. Yeah. He could just do that. And I was the opposite. I was just...
Hammer
and saw. Let me build some, I'll be happy. I couldn't care less. Still not. I'm a terrible businessman and stuff. But somehow we got through life together.
Cobbled everything together. Worked out perfectly. Well, great. Thanks very much. I appreciate it, Milt. Let me ask you, as I start to wrap up over here, that the... I may have asked you this in the past also, but I forgot. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that is important to you? What is your philosophy of life? What is a motto, something?
I think the best thing in life is getting up the next day and looking at the sunrise and say, God, isn't it marvelous? I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, my wife will tell you, she says, you're always working. And I said, no, I'm never working. I haven't had a day of work in my life because I've always enjoyed everything I've done ever in my life. Because, you know, I could be in my little shop in Santa Barbara building stuff. I enjoy that. I could be here talking to people. I've been talking to you.
Sure.
This isn't working.
It's fine.
And having a nice little glass of wine here is not working.
That's right.
So, at any rate, the goal in life... Yeah, I'm 83 now, and I have created a few things that we're doing, like the musical, that's on a stage of development, and maybe that'll take another 2-3 years to get going. And there's a theater downtown I'd like to restore, so maybe
it's always good to have something that you're working on.
That's the carrot in front of the donkey.
Exactly. Yeah.
Never take away my carrot.
Yeah,
because I feel so sorry for people that
have nothing to live for.
Well, you know, the sad thing about people in my book is that, you know, a lot of times because of fate or whatever it is, they start life, they get a job that they don't really like, maybe good old daddy wanted him to be a lawyer because he was a lawyer. Maybe.
Sure, it's not their choice.
It's not what they wanted to do. Then they married somebody early on because dear old daddy wanted them to marry so they could have grandchildren, but they're not happy, so then they have a terrible marriage and they get divorced and they have another terrible marriage and get divorced and they can't wait to retire, so and then they play one round of golf and die.
Yeah.
But why do that? Just have a good time while you're here.
Yes.
And create stuff. And I guess maybe an answer to your question is as long as you have more things to do than you can possibly accomplish, then it's good. So that's why I say get up in the morning, say, oh, holy Christ, I've got so much to do today.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you say, oh, I better get up in the morning and finish what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. Have something you do every day. Make a plan. Yeah, right.
The philosophy of life is, today everybody's living longer and everything, which I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
At my age. But the whole name of the game is just, as long as you're here, have fun, and I think when it's time to check out, go away.
When it's time, it's time. Thank you very much. That's great. That was Milt Larson, my friend. I thank you very much. Appreciate it. Always great.
Fun talking.
Yes. For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.